Would you like to swing on a star? Carry moonbeams home in a jar and be better off than you are? Or would you rather be a mule?
Welcome to Shoestring Radio Theater. We now present Astonishing Failures, written by Hugh A.D. Spencer, directed by Paul Dougherty, and produced by Monica Sullivan at Western Public Radio in San Francisco.
The beautiful mentotechnical assistant, Loxanne Burnett, sensed that she was in great peril, primarily because of the unbreakable plastisteel cords that strapped her helplessly onto the otherwise quite comfortable sedan chair in this 28th century luxury hotel. The Venusian entered. He leered at her, and Loxanne Burnett allowed herself the emotional response of loathing.
Let me go!
It's no use, little suckling. My animal charisma protects me from your pitiful telepathic machinations.
Loxanne then realized that this foul, power-seeking individual was correct. Her strongest mental commands were ineffective.
Oh!
The room swam with metaphoric panic as Loxanne realized that the Primera Venus was right. Within her own mind, she found that she was unable to carry out even the most basic quadratic factorials and hyperlogic exercises.
In fact, you'll soon discover that my enhanced personal charisma will exert its influence over you.
Mr. Premier, you disgust me.
An impressive show of virtue, my soft lump. You have defended your moral integrity even after treatment from my persuader beam. But I'm sure we'll still manage. Somehow.
In spite of his hateful bodily emanations, Loxanne could feel her resolve slipping. With horror, she concluded that she would soon be under the complete psychophysiological domination of the Venusian dictator.
I suppose I should be insulted by your existence. Most women don't need the prod of electrolobotomy to give themselves to the most powerful man in the solar system.
Ow!
But never mind. Soon you will be my mistress, and then you will willingly reveal all you know of those foolish, freedom-loving scientists.
Yuck! You may gain access to my physical orifices, but I'll tell you nothing. You monstrous embodiment of entrenched vested interests and lustful self-indulgence, you!
That's me, all right.
Oh, Jones! Praise the lords of logic!
You there, dictator. Cease that sexual aggression.
Jones Stone, it can't be. I saw you die in the plasma pits of Luna. Gods, gods, needle beam this intruder to death.
Don't bother crying out for help, Mr. Premier. It will be some time before your lackeys recover from my mind blast.
I won't need those stooges to atomize you, you naive fool. You'll soon appreciate the destructive power of my neutrino blaster.
I doubt that.
Jones Stove turned his cerebro amplifier to its lowest setting.
I want you to know that only you are responsible for the following events, Mr. Premier.
The tiny mechanism emitted a selective particle field which located the Premier's nervous system and randomized all information passing through the Venusian dictator's brain.
Oh, Jones, you saved me.
Jones Stove recalled the Premier's plan to violate his beloved's moral and physical integrity. He turned the cerebro amplifier up to its second level. The instrument's beam now accelerated all the electrochemical reaction in the Premier's neural network, causing all his nerve cells to fire at once and evaporating the fluids at the axial junctions.
Oh, God! It stopped! Thank you!
Then Jones remembered the Premier's huge conspiracy against scientific and social progress, and how his elite corps of secret police and political strongmen had machinated to suppress the healthy propagation of Mento technology. He turned the Cerebro amplifier to its highest setting, which would initiate the instantaneous explosion of all brain matter in the victim.
Ouch, Matt! This really hurts!
Have you identified any difficulties with the narrative?
Oh, no, no, chummy. It's great stuff. A ripping tale. I particularly like the part where you blow up the Premier's brain.
Oh, well, thank you, Donald.
Keep up the good work, Jay. You have to finish that trilogy by the end of the week.
Oh.
A few years have elapsed since we last talked. To be more precise, it's early 1950. The Fabulist is an organized group of deluded adolescents have broken up. We are now a diffuse group of deluded adults. Accordingly, most of us, well, take me for example.
Oh, hiya, Bob. Nice of you to join us.
Sorry I'm late. Rewrites.
Okay, set crew. The lights are looking good. Close the set. Now quiet, everybody. Sound, please. In 5 seconds, we're live. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Yes, boys and girls, it's Alexander Steele and the Solar Police Force back again for this week's installment of Rocket Racketing Exploits. Today's adventure is brought to you by Bafo Mug, the healthful barley and oat-flavored breakfast drink that's delicious, nutritious, and power-packed. As you may recall from last week's episode, Alexander Steele had been ordered by the robot Brain to infiltrate the caves of Io to stop the traitorous alien mutants who were plotting to overthrow the Interplanetary Republic.
Get back, you inhuman slavering hordes!
Well, I warned you. We grew up. And we had to make some of the tiresome and unpleasant decisions grown-up type people have to make sometimes. I got a job as a publicist for an outfit that was pushing ads for this new fad called television. An interesting medium which my science fiction colleagues and I occasionally referred to as visiscreens or radioscopes. I figured none of this would last, but it might be fun for a little while. This should give you some idea how good I was at predicting future trends. So perhaps as advanced punishment for a wasted old age, I got a job during television's so-called Golden Age. Of course, as the co-creator of this old pulp favorite, I'm sure I had a little bit of an inside track. There is a rough justice to the universe. After an adolescence spent humiliating my devoted chum and collaborator Sheldon Isaacs, here I was, working every night churning out all those horrible stories we used to write in his mother's kitchen. To be truthful, my colleague, Sheldon Isaacs, is slowly developing a measure of fame. He has continued to supply our mutual associate, Stuart D. McGreedy, with stories, and ultimately replaces Evanston as the most frequently published writer in Tremendous Stories of Super Science. And, speaking of McGreedy...
Warnings. We must develop a cure for them.
Some people just seem to stay in your life, like an annoying song from a TV ad. McGreedy was like that. He and Poole are still editing Tremendous. Dave is still keeping his word and keeping most of the ex-Fabulist in print. And the word is that Dave was the only thing keeping that magazine together.
Stuart! I'm in the garden!
Hell's bells. Wonderful, dear!
The word was also that McGreedy was starting to get involved in some very strange stuff. I sometimes wondered if he was living proof that some people shouldn't stay in the same job too long.
My goodness! Look at all those flowers!
One from every variety in the garden. It's all set. Now, are you ready?
I don't know about this, dear. If this doesn't work, I'm gonna suffer all day.
Stuart! I don't want to hear this! After all your talk, you aren't even going to try?
Aw, Pamela.
We did the mental exercises last night, didn't we?
Yes, we did, dear.
So, do you believe what those two have been telling you? Do you believe what you've been telling me?
Yes. Yes, I do believe.
Well, then... Inhale. Come on, get your nose in those petals. Any reaction?
No, nothing.
Try some of the other flowers. Inhale, inhale, inhale! Well?
Nothing. Absolutely no reaction. The exercises work! My allergies are cured!
Really?
Pamela, do you know what this means? Evanston and Cross are right! Mentotechnics works! The future is now!
I got the world on a string, and I'm sitting on a rainbow. Got that string about
sweetheart?
Little finger.
There's no coffee left, darling. Honey, I'm home. Sweetie, wake up, dearest. You can't sleep another day away. I sure could use some sleep myself, sweetheart. We had another all-night rewrite session. I mean, who'd have thought kiddie show scripts could get so complicated? It took 4 hours to figure out a believable reason for a protagonist to stop blowing up Jupiter long enough to relax with a steaming, healthful serving of Bofu Mug, the breakfast snack of kids, champs, and space heroes. Pretty good copy, huh? So, honey, do you want to get up and grab some grub? What's this? Dear Robert, I've stopped over to Vanna's for a short visit. I think there's some milk left in the fridge. Help yourself. Hello, Clyde residence. Oh, Vonda, can I speak to... Oh, I see. No, as you can gather, she's not in right now. Well, I guess we're a little low on provisions, so I suspect, being the good soldier she is, she's out replenishing our stocks. Yes, even on a Sunday. Of course, I'll have her call you right away. Bye-bye. Ray? Where the hell are you?
Oh, what the hell. This is what happens when you clock in too much overtime. But the approaching disintegration of my first marriage was pretty upsetting. At the time, I believed that marriage was a solution, a joyous completion, a spiritual, intellectual, and physical communion. Only there seemed to be a widening gap between my expectations and the reality. If I really could jump back and forth in time like this, I'd reach back to my young self, tell myself to hire a good lawyer, and take a hard look.
Hello, Ray? Oh, sorry, ma'am. You're calling for Mr. Ziegler. No, you're not interrupting anything. I was just waiting for another call. He was? Well, I'm glad he was happy with the last submission. The final chapters. Well, I'm not exactly sure. I've been very busy with my work at the studio lately, and I'm currently collaborating on my latest novella with Mr. Isaacs. But I'm sure I could get them to you this morning.
Sheldon! Sheldon Isaacs! Sheldon, have you been listening?
Hey, where did my paper go? I beg your pardon, Barbara. Am I supposed to be doing something right now?
Oy, Sheldon! I told you not to forget to pick up some more cough medicine for Aaron, and then we have a parent-teacher interview with Beth's math instructor tomorrow night.
I heard you. I knew that.
And did you remember that you were supposed to drive the twins to their boobies this morning?
Well...
Well, never mind. I'll do it myself. Again. Sheldon!
Yes, Barbara?
Look! It's time for you to go to work!
XCP over XPD plus. Greater productivity, greater availability, greater profit. We live in great times, ladies and gentlemen. And don't forget, read Swanson's Chapter 6. The evolution of plastic wrap packaging and Lee's paper on frosted icing sculpture forms. There may be a quiz next week.
Dr. Isaacs, if you have a moment, a word in your shell-like ear.
Yes, Dean. How can I help you in your important duties, sir?
I've been getting a few comments about your classes, Isaac. Concerned comments. From what I hear, you have a rather unique approach. Jelly donuts mass production is a brave new technology for feeding the world's hungry. Artificial preservatives as a vital tool for feeding space travelers on their way to distant planets?
Yes, that's some of the more advanced levels of discussion, reserved only once we've covered the basics of the day's curriculum.
Still, I really think you ought to tone down your lectures to more closely suit the image of the Newark Polytechnic Institute. After all, our student body isn't heading for MIT or Caltech, are they? Waiters and bakers can't work if they've been blinded with too much science, can they?
I want to thank you very deeply for those completely candid and tremendously valuable comments, Dean. I'm truly touched that you would take time from your demanding schedule to speak to me personally. And all I can say is that I truly believe that as the mentors of tomorrow's service technicians, we are at the cutting edge of scientific progress. I humbly, humbly apologize if my zeal and enthusiasm for the grand mission and your profound vision for the Newark Polytechnic has in any way caused these fine young people any personal anguish or given you any personal or professional setback.
I appreciate all that, Isaacs, I think. Keep up the good work, and maybe we can talk about all of this later on, when it's more convenient.
Absolutely, sir. Please come and see me any time.
Sheldon, stop typing. We are trying to sleep.
Coming, Barbara. Just as soon as I get this story ready to send to Mr. MacReady.
Great, great. I'm sure he won't sleep until he gets it.
Well, it looks like March will be a bumper month for Tremendous. I've got the new novella from Denson, the one you're so anxious to see. Then Clyde's managed to turn this nice short.
Clyde? He's still around? I thought he'd gone into radio.
Television. But he's working hard to keep his hand in the magazines. And there's another story from that new author, Magnus O'Toole.
Who the hell's that?
Pen name for Rayanne Sparks. That's Clyde's wife.
I want you to watch that. I don't want to see the specter of nepotism wrapping its oily tendrils around the pages of Tremendous Stories.
Yes, I'll take all appropriate precautions. The art department says that Steven sent in a magnificent set of line drawings for most of the stuff you approved last week. And of course, there's the serial novel. You know, I really think that Cross's latest chapter is incredibly long.
And it's going to stay that way. David, I'm overruling all of your so-called edits on the manuscript. I really don't understand why you refuse to appreciate that man's genius.
Oh, yes, I must be racked with professional jealousy. And don't forget, we still have installment 17 of Isaac's Macrocosmic Voyagers.
You mean it isn't finished yet?
Well, judging from our mail and the fanzines, it's still pretty popular. Actually, I think it's kind of fun, and we can always depend on him.
Like growths on a toad.
Anyway, I've gone over the manuscripts again.
And?
And I just can't see a good place for all the new articles, especially if you won't let me cut down Cross. We're booked solid through the summer, let alone the March or April issues. Besides, I've got most of the layouts already done.
David. The articles are going in, either in the March or April issues. Drop half the lithos and scratch the woman's story. That ought to free up some space.
But I've already sent acceptance letters and checks. They're expecting to see the stories in print. The illustrations are already paid for.
This is a senior editorial decision, my boy. These may be the most important written communications of the century. I'm not going to let your minor commitments and little concerns get in the way of this mission of science.
Minor concerns? What the hell am I supposed to tell our writers? We're not the only game in town these days.
We tell them the truth. There's been a change in the editorial philosophy of Tremendous Stories. And we may accidentally skin a few noses as we move along the upward spiral of progress.
Well, in that case, I had the following change in personal policy prepared for this eventuality. This is my resignation, but I'm sure with your newly advanced mental powers, you can run the place on your own now.
David!
One,
It was inevitable. Like the unstoppable force colliding with the immovable object. But we've worked together to build the reputation of that magazine for over 10 years. I'm gonna go ahead and get comfortable, okay? And now that sociopath is going to annihilate it all with those damned articles.
Couldn't you have found some way to stop him?
Nope. The editorial autonomy I carved out for the publishers has turned out to be a two-edged sword. For years now, old Stedman has let us print what we want, but now the old lady refuses to get involved. Mentotechnics. Damn that Evanston. They're all obsessed.
So what are you going to do now?
Well, I've set up a few possibilities. Yellow Tag Books is planning to start a series of paperback anthologies, and I might pick up some reader fees there. Oh. And then I got a call from Ziegler's office, wondering if I could come down and see them about their magazine. Well, God knows, I might do something really outrageous and actually try and write something.
Well, I wish you better luck than I had. That moron's trashing my story.
Oh, wow, Rayanne, what happened to your clothes?
Well.
Never mind, I'm glad you're here. Come to Papa. Oh, Ray, how do you manage it? I mean, doesn't Clyde wonder where you are?
How can I stay away? The rejected artist needs solace. Besides, we're sort of like the unstoppable force in the immovable object.
Immovable. Boiling.
I certainly hope so.
By this time, I was pretty sure that something was very seriously wrong, and I suppose if I had any brains, I would have figured out that she was seeing someone else and might even have been able to work out who she was seeing. But alien invasions and exploding solar systems are a lot easier to face than admitting that the one you love thinks that you're less interesting than Martian pond scum. I guess if I had the righteous determination of a domestic Alexander Steele, I might have tracked down my wife. Then, with alarming virility, I might have wrested her away from the insidious clutches of the evil lecherous assistant editor from the seventh dimension. I guess I could have. I mean, some marriages do manage to survive the occasional affair, don't they? Yeah, I suppose I could have found her and brought her home. But I had something else to do. Something more important. And I needed peace and quiet in the apartment.
This is a story of an old man whose job becomes obsolete because of automation. His family wants to move to Mars, but they can't afford it.
Engineers switched on UNIVAC, the world's most powerful calculating machine.
Then they offer to reprocess his brain as a component in their master computer.
In this story, they keep sending the soldier into battle and he keeps getting killed.
The United Nations announced no intention of scaling back the police action in Korea, in spite of the heavier-than-anticipated casualties.
But they file up the paperwork and they won't let him stay dead.
In the future, everybody has to buy things and take dope.
Economists warn that we may be headed for another recession.
The less you work, the more you have to consume.
In my future, business and the churches have seized power.
Investigations into stolen H-bomb secrets continue.
These special effects regularly fake miracles.
In my future, the devil declares war on humanity and sends an invasion force to Washington.
The Senate committee hearings into un-American activities is set to begin tomorrow.
In my future, television is used to fake the colonization of the planets so people don't worry about the destruction of the Earth's natural resources.
The use of atomic weapons and radioactive waste on North Korean troops was a subject of discussion in Congress today.
Maybe I could have found her and made her come back, but I had to write, and this was my best work. Somehow I knew that I could never again write as well as I did in the darkness of that awful decade. For many of us, with our best work. It was in those black nights that we found our voices. That concludes part one of Astonishing Failures, written by Hugh A.D. Spencer, directed by Paul Dougherty, and produced by Monica Sullivan at Western Public Radio in San Francisco. It starred Frank Clemens as young Bob Clyde, Russ Hickman as D.H. Evanston, Jeff Winsek as David Poole, Jeff Goddard as Stuart McCready, Francis Germishausen as Rayanne Sparks, Jonathan Wind as Sheldon Isaacs, Lauren Davis as Barbara Isaacs, Tony Mazuka as Pam McCready, and Paul Dougherty as old Bob Clyde. Our co-producer was Steve Rubenstein,
and our senior associate producer was Cynthia Cravens. We thank Carol Pearson and Carolyn Van Putten for their enduring commitment to public radio. You can email us at srt@shoestring.org. For more information on Shoestring, visit our website at www.shoestring.org. For Shoestring Radio Theater, I'm Paul Dougherty. Thank you for joining us. Carry moonbeams home in a jar and